All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our mayor's podcast, Breaking It Down for Our Constituents. Today, I'm joined by Mayor Van Jones, co-hosting with me. Did I say Van Johnson?
You said Van Jones.
Oh, God. So, okay, start
no,
over.
No, don't start over. No, I give up. I'm out. I see where your mind is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our mayor's podcast, Breaking It Down. I'm joined today by my co-host, Mayor Van Johnson from the great city of Savannah, Georgia. Thank you for being here with me today, Van.
Thank you for allowing me to even share your shine. I'm just so glad to be here and with someone that I think a lot of, a superstar mayor in our country, moving some things. So let's get to it.
And we're joined today by Mayor Tashar Jones from the great city of St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So today we're going to be talking about what's the GDP. People keep talking about it. And it is, we're going to talk about what's the GDP and the economics of Black mayors-led cities and the leveraging of our power for the future. And so I know you're a former treasurer also, so you're one of those, you know, she's one of those real smart girls.
Well, it's a unique skill set for mayors. Often we come from other areas, but to have someone that was a city treasurer, I mean, you know, she knows about budget. She knows about cash flow. You're not going to get nothing past her.
Right. So, Mayor Jones, break it down for us. What is GDP?
Well, GDP is something, you know, you hear about it all the time in the news about GDP grew, you know, by X percent this particular quarter or whatever. And it's basically all of the goods and services sold in a specific time period by different countries. And it measures the economy as a whole. And when it's growing, it's a sign the economy is doing good. And when it's decreasing, it's a sign the economy is doing bad. And local governments play a part in driving economic activity, which means that our efforts impact the GDP.
And so for a person in St. Louis, and an area that is as vibrant as St. Louis is, how do you help to kind of move that needle toward the good in terms of economic development and other things that you're responsible for?
Well, as mayor, it's my responsibility to, when it comes to economic growth, to ensure that economic development is reflective in everything that the city does. It's our strengths, our needs, and we want to provide opportunities for our cities. Because basically, if our citizens aren't making money, they can't buy anything. And if they can't buy anything, then GDP is directly affected. That's how we do it. And we, as mayors, provide that by, you know, having opportunity, the things that we're talking about at this conference, making sure that workforce development is providing opportunity, especially for Black and brown populations. And we know that most of our major cities now are run by Black mayors. So, you know, as Black mayors, I think, bring something different to the table because we're worried about the prosperity and health and wealth of all of our citizens, but more particularly those that have been ignored for decades.
Since you said that, I mean, and I think it's really relevant, when we say economic development or our GDP or improving it, oftentimes when we're saying it in the global, it's one thing. It doesn't mean economic development for everyone. So what do you do to kind of make sure that we're inclusive, making sure that everyone has an opportunity to grow as well?
Well, we look at things in St. Louis through an equity lens. We have a chief racial equity and development officer who works with all of our departments to make sure that every dollar spent and every contract written has equity at the center. And we also want to make sure that as we are spending these millions of dollars that the federal government is sending directly to cities, that that's also spent in an equitable way to address the needs of neighborhoods that have been neglected for decades. For example, in St. Louis, we received a $500 million ARPA allocation. Half of that is going to Black and brown people. And I have been very intentional about it. And I've said it in my State of the City address. Hey, we're putting this money in these neighborhoods because we can't expect cities to succeed if over half of it is left to fail.
Intentional.
And you know what? I've always wanted to ask you this question. So as a little girl, did you just grow up saying, I want to be the treasurer and the mayor? Like, how did you get to to be the treasurer and then the mayor? Like, what was going through your mind? When did you get that epiphany moment?
Oh, yeah, because when I was a little girl, I didn't want to be in politics. My dad was in politics, and I was steering clear of it. I wanted no parts of it because it required me as a little girl to have to grow up fast. Because we would go to events and I'd have to always sit there and be quiet and be mature as, you know, an 8 or 9 year old kid. And what does an 8 or 9 year old want to do? They want to go outside and play. And I was a tomboy. So I wanted to put on my Converse and my, you know, cutoff shorts and go out and play and ride bikes with my cousins all day. But no, I had to wear a dress and bobby socks and with my little Mary Janes and and sit there and know the difference between a salad fork and a regular fork. So, you know, that's stressful for a 9 year old.
Right.
And I swore that, you know, once I grew up, I wanted nothing to do with politics. But, you know, God is funny that way, where he says, you know, the quickest way to make me laugh is to show me what you'll never do or tell me what you'll never do.
Right.
And when I became an adult, I got became a committee woman. And that sort of reignited a fire in me to that I've discovered that politics is a way to help people in myriads of ways. And so became a committee, Democratic committee woman, then state rep, then treasurer, and now mayor.
Wow. Now, I have a, you know, you're one of my favorite mayors. I peek in on other mayors. I look in their newspapers, see what they're up to, kind of watching. And you are, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but a truth machine. I mean, you keep it absolutely so real. And I really wanted to know about that because I've seen you say things that I'll say to myself, that's probably not really politically correct, you know, but you didn't dance around the issue. I mean, you just can't, that's it, bam. And I'm like, whoa, it's like this, the courage of this mayor. And I wanted to know a little bit about that, because you deal with some very difficult issues and you have not shied away from being the most authentic you. And I wanted to know a little bit about that.
Well, I would say a few things contribute to that. Number one, my father was an unapologetic politician as well. When he was comptroller of the city of St. Louis, he led in a way that created opportunity for business, for Black businesses that didn't have opportunity. He laid the groundwork for mandatory minimums and contracts. And he studied under the late, great Maynard Jackson. And, you know, Maynard, one of Maynard's famous lines was, I didn't have set aside programs. I just set it aside. And, you know, growing up and watching that and also seeing how he was vilified for that, just lit a fire in me that said, you know, I'm going to lead in an unapologetic way. My mother and grandmother, also very strong women, short women, but very strong women. You didn't play with either one of them. They were very silent, but they were always a lady. So I get the best of both worlds, right? I get to be a lady, but I also get to tell the truth and shame the devil. So it's been a wholesome experience for me. And I would say the last thing that helped me was, you know, St. Louis had the Mike Brown protest, which we became the epicenter of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think being able to lead out of that circumstance for our city made me a better mayor.
You talked about the riot and all the things that happened. How does that affect you economically? Because, you know, when that's playing out in real time, people on the other side are saying, I don't think I want to go visit there. I don't think I want to go there.
Cancel our plans in St. Louis this weekend.
Because most people don't know. I'm from Little Rock. And during the Central High crisis, the next year, we had zero new businesses come to the city of Little Rock. And so people don't know how that really impacts your city.
Well, I think we were at a point where, you know, the tide was turning. So we saw all of the corporate social responsibility programs come out of George Floyd.
Right.
A lot of that happened locally after the death of Mike Brown in St. Louis. And so, again, we set the stage for corporate social responsibility there. They built a new urban league office on the site of where a gas station was burned down. They put more resources in the community. One of our largest companies built a new call center in Ferguson so people could be closer to work, and put a daycare center for the employees within the call center. So we saw companies step up and do more where they could have just said, you know what, we're going to wash our hands of Ferguson and wash our hands of St. Louis and go.
Where do you see now, kind of almost post-pandemic, and I say that, you know, because we're up, we're down, the economic opportunities, there's money flowing from the federal government that's been unprecedented. Now, where do you see your growth areas in St. Louis? Where do you see the opportunities for you all to kind of pivot to where you haven't pivoted before?
Well, like I said before, with the money that we're receiving from the federal government, we are intentionally spending it in Black neighborhoods to return those neighborhoods to places that looked like when I was growing up, to bring commercial activity and retail activity back, to build new houses on vacant land, because there are some swaths of North St. Louis that look like bombed out war zones, where there are no houses on a single block. And I want to return those houses to those blocks. You know, St. Louis also has a rich Black cultural history. The first hospital west of the Mississippi where Black people could train, Homer G. Phillips Hospital, is in St. Louis. Annie Malone had her own school called Poro College that trained beauticians and seamstresses in North St. Louis. And this was all in the Ville neighborhood. And so we need to return those neighborhoods to areas of prosperity, which is why we opened an economic empowerment center in Sumner High School, which is also the first Black high school west of the Mississippi, to honor the history of that high school. But also, we never know. We may be birthing the next Annie Malone or the next Dave Stewart of Worldwide Technology by giving them access to resources to build businesses in their community.
Next to Sharla Jones.
There you go. You heard it here first.
That's right. That's right.
So, Mayor Jones, I know you're a proud HBCU grad. And so kind of talk about your experience, you know, attending the HBCU. Like, how did you pick the one? And then your experience of, as of course, you know, man, we're both swords of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. So, you know, what made you choose that sorority?
So for HBCU, I knew that I wanted to go to an HBCU because of School Days came out. And I saw Mission College, right? And then A Different World started on TV. And I said, no, this is the experience that I need and I deserve. And my high school counselor actually told me, she was a white woman, told me that I wasn't going to get into college. But there was a Black high school counselor right next door to her. And so I didn't take her answer for good. So I went next to him and I said, Mr. Scoggin, I want to go to college. But Ms. Dugan told me I'm not good. I don't have the grades to get into college. Can you help me?
Have you written Ms. Dugan a letter?
Yes, I did.
Say, sincerely, Mayor.
Right. Mayor. Look at me now.
Mayor.
And he sent me to a college fair. He said, bring back some applications. I'll work with you to get them completed. And I got into Howard and Hampton. And no offense to my Bison family, but my dad said, you can go anywhere in the world but Howard. Because was the late 80s, early 90s, you know, at the height of the crack epidemic here in D.C. So, and he had a bunch of golf buddies who had kids that were going to Howard at the time who were getting in trouble. So he said, no, well, I'll take you to Hampton. See if you like it. If you don't like it, then we'll talk. First time I set foot on the campus, I fell in love. Because if you know Hampton University, it sits on the Chesapeake Bay. There are, you know, boats sailing by and just water on three sides and just a beautiful, beautiful campus. And the people there are beautiful as well. I felt at home and was able to graduate in 4 years because my dad said, you only got 4 years. After that, you're on your own. I was able to, or I didn't pledge Delta until after I graduated, but my best friend's mom was a Delta. And she led and was just a beautiful, or is still, just a beautiful, powerful woman. And I remember spending a lot of time with her and saying, I want to be just like Miss Gloria when I grow up, right? Yeah. So it was, and was able to get a godmother in Delta who helped shepherd me through the process after I graduated. And the rest, they say, is history.
Tell me about mayoring while Black. Has your Black card ever been taken away? Have you been or feel like you've been subjected to unreasonable expectations because you happen to be a Black mayor? Like, you should just come up and say, you know what? From now on, our budget is all for Black people. You know, now, tell us about that experience and the challenges, because you're the mayor of the city.
Right. You're the mayor of the city.
And yet there are expectations on you that may not be put on other mayors. I wanted to know your experiences with that.
Well, it's almost like how Obama was when he was in the White House, right? He, there are expectations from your people. And I remember Mayor Shokwe Lumumba from Jackson, Mississippi, told me once that being a Black mayor is a balancing act between white fear and Black expectations. And it struck me. I mean, it just literally, you know, put a knife in my heart. But it's true. There are, you know, my Black community wants me to fix everything overnight. I've only been mayor a little under 2 years. And so sometimes I'm not Black enough for my people, but too Black for white people. And, you know, it's a delicate balancing act. But as we talked about earlier, I just have to lead the only way I know how. And I try to propose policies that lift all boats in the tide. And knowing that if we solve the problems of Black people and Black mothers, that solves everybody's problems.
So how do you keep that work-life balance? I know you're a mom. That's your number one priority. Yeah. And so, but how do you balance that? Because a lot of mayors decided not to run a second term, a lot of Black female mayors, because they were having threats with their children. How do you protect your child and do it all?
Yeah, it's difficult some days. And I just am, I'm really protective about boundaries. I set boundaries and I protect them fiercely. If my son has a basketball game and I'm in town, I'm there. And, you know, whatever it is, either staff can attend or they can wait until I'm done with my child. And my staff knows that and they tell people that. It's funny, I got attacked by a few in the LGBT community. I'm not going to do a blanket broad brush, but I missed Pride Parade this year because it was the same weekend as my son's basketball tournament in Indianapolis. He comes first, period. Stop.
Right? And most reasonable people understand that.
Most reasonable people understood that. But there were some who challenged me on Twitter, of all places. Why wasn't the mayor at the Pride Parade? I'm sorry. I'm a mother.
Mayor was being mom.
Right, right. Exactly. And he expects me to be there. And it's quality time for us. You know, it's a, you know, 3.5-4 hour drive where I get to, it's just the two of us, and that doesn't happen a lot.
And he can never get back. You can never get that back.
I can't get that back.
So tell us about your son in terms of he lives with the most famous woman in St. Louis. You know, the person that's on the news and all this other places, the one yelling at him to pick his clothes up and stuff. I mean, you know, what does he feel about, how does he balance mom at one end, mm-hmm. but then, you know, this other lady who is like, you know, running the whole city?
You know, there are days he loves it and there are days that he hates it. And I think the times that he doesn't like it is when I'm at his games and people come up to me wanting to take pictures with me. He's like, no, but that's just my mom. You know, I want you to pay attention to me. And I had to have a conversation with him earlier today about, you know, how his behavior at school, he's held to a different standard because a lot of people in the building know who he is. And I actually had to present a proclamation at his school once. So, you know, already, yeah. And I called
it. It became a news story. I mean, you know, unfairly. I mean, you know, mayor's son is acting up. I mean, we know that, you know, right. that people will take those and leverage those things.
They
because
will.
For you, that's a weak spot, like any of us.
Right.
Once you get into our family, you're hitting home.
Right. Or once a teacher knows that he's the mayor's son, they hold him to a higher expectation and a higher standard. And the slightest thing sets them off. And so, you know, he had his earbuds in his ear today and I told him, you know, don't give him an excuse. You know, that's constantly what I'm telling him. Don't give him an excuse to pick you out.
Right. Right.
So it's difficult for him, but I think he's adjusting.
So the other question is, I tell people all the time, once you win, because you're normally in a campaign trail and then you win, but you become the mayor of the people that didn't vote for you also.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal with them?
Well, I've had to deal with them. and as we were talking about earlier today at the breakfast plenary, how people are a lot bolder. That they have been in decades. Social media makes people just really nasty towards you, not only, you know, behind a keyboard, but also in person. They feel like they have the audacity to just jump in your face. What my security noticed the last time somebody tried to jump in my face, I jumped right back.
that probably wasn't wise for them. You're like, I got this. Hold up.
But I told you about my mother and my grandmother. They didn't play. You know, there are times when, you know, I just think that there are times when I will not accept any sort of disrespect from anybody. I just won't. You know, you want me to respect you. Well, you know, it goes both ways. So people who didn't vote for me, who aren't happy with, you know, how I'm mayoring. One time, you know, I was at a neighborhood meeting and I already knew I could tell, I could see them because, you know, they're standing there with their arms folded and they have a scowl on their face. And I said, I know by the time I leave, I'm going to get something from one of these, you know, and true enough, they were trying to get in my face as I was leaving. And, you know, I'm sorry. I come from a Black neighborhood, Black family.
Well, you're one of our most high-profile mayors in the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and certainly you're a rock star in the African American Mayors Association. Talk about how this benefits you. You know, obviously people see it as a junket or a trip, or you're just going off to do this. But what is the real benefit as you see it being a part of these organizations?
It gives me a seat at the table to be able to bring resources back to my community. And as we were talking about earlier, that there are an unprecedented amount of federal resources now flowing through all of our departments. And so I'm taking the time to meet with the intergovernmental relations folks, the secretaries themselves, because if they know you, then when that grant comes across their desk, you know, I'm not saying that it's all who you know and what you know, but you know,
it's all who you know.
It is who you know. And you know, and I just want to make sure that I am, you know, leading St. Louis into the 21st century in a way where we're not leaving any money on the table or any resources on the table. St. Louis has lost 500,000 people in the last 50 years. And it's time for us to reverse that trend. But part of reversing that trend is being present and being at the table and being in these rooms when the decisions are made.
So one of my last questions, you talked about all the money that's coming through federal government right now. Do you feel like some cities are choking on the money? In other words, the money is coming so fast, but you don't have that many grant people to fill out this grant process. I remember, I'm not going to name the agencies, but they told me their application was 130 pages. And I said, well, who has time to fill that out, right?
Right.
And so... So how do you feel about this process? The money's flowing, but can we really keep up?
That's going to be difficult, and especially with the Congress that we have right now. I don't know, you know, because some of the appropriations were only for 2 years. And so as we look at the compromises that may have to be made in order to continue to pay our bills or raise the debt ceiling, they may start looking at clawbacks for programs that haven't yet appropriated or made grants in a lot of different secretaries' offices. So, And it's going to be difficult. I really wish the federal government would make these applications simpler, not only for cities that have the capacity like mine to apply for these grants, but smaller cities like Savannah, like, you know, Baton Rouge, and, mayors that I know are capable of doing the work, but they don't have, you know, a whole team of people able to fill out a 130-page grant application. That doesn't make any sense.
I do it all myself. I just sit up all night and just get it done. Like you, but you say it is a huge challenge, and so it becomes inequitable because you just, you know, the larger cities that can will, and those who just don't can't.
Right, right, and also don't have the money to hire a firm or a consulting firm to fill out these grant applications. Right. So, you know, it just a few questions. What do you need the money for? How are you going to spend it? And what's your budget?
Sign date.
What does shovel ready really mean?
That's right.
Right.
Did you buy the shovel?
So we end with this question. So what's your word for the year and why?
Word for the year is possibilities.
Wow.
Possibilities, because we have not taken a look at what is possible. And in St. Louis, we are definitely expanding what is possible.
There you go.
Well, that is happening because Tashara O. Jones is the mayor of St. Louis. And I know because we look and, you know, you've been such a rock star to us. And again, we watch you and, you know, just makes us all want to keep it real, like even more because, you know, that's what she does.
Thank you, Mayor Jones.
Thank you. The pleasure's mine.